So, okay, so we'll see. So Mordechai is sitting at the king's gates, and we have these two officers, Bigson and Seresh. They want to kill the king. So there are different opinions among our sages why they wanted to kill the king. Some say that they said, from the time Esther walked in, he loves her so much, he's with her every night, we never get to rest, because he's with her all the time, he's all the time thirsty. So all the time he's saying, bring me more water, bring me more to drink, bring me more to drink, and we never get to rest. This is driving us crazy. We got to get rid of her, we got to get rid of him. Some say that the Targum says that it's the Pasuk is connected. It says Mordechai was at the king's gates, and Bigson and Seresh got upset. What were they upset about? They said, ooh, the queen's bringing him in. He's going to take our place. We got to do something. So they said, we'll poison her and we'll kill him. And the other understanding is that because Mordechai was sitting at the king's gates, because Mordechai was part of the Sanhedrin, the halacha says that Sanhedrin doesn't have to talk every language, but they have to be able to understand every language. Because when testimony comes before them, they can't have a translator there. They have to hear the testimony themselves. So Mordechai was part of the Sanhedrin, so he knew to understand every language. And these two, they thought, oh, he doesn't speak this Persian language, Tarsi. So they stood right next to him. They were discussing how they're going to have to bump the king. Mordechai hears this, so he gives word to Esther. And Esther tells the king, and she tells the king in Mordechai's name. And when they check the things out, so they find out that it's true, and they hang the two, and that's written in the history books that the king has. Now, our sages say, we learn from here, Kol ha'omer davar b'shem amor mevi geula le'olam. If you quote something in someone's name, you cause redemption to come to the world. Esther could have just as well just told the king and not told him where she got it from, but she didn't. And by virtue of the fact that she attributed this information to Mordechai, ultimately the Jewish people were redeemed. We're holding chapter 3. So Esther is queen. Mordechai has saved the king's life. It's written down in the history books. We have the refuah. We have the cure is there. Everything's ready for the Jewish people to be saved. And now the Jewish people deserve to be punished. After these things, that everything's prepared, the stage is set for the Jewish people to be saved. So the king brings Haman up. He gives him the throne. The Medrash, he doesn't give him the throne. He gives him the highest officer, the position of highest officer. And everyone has to bow to Haman. It says two terms of bowing. It says everyone is koreim umishtachavim lo. So our sages say he had this idol everyone had to bow to. Some say he wore a necklace with an idol on it, and everyone had to bow. And Mordechai says, I'm not bowing. So the Medrash says that Mordechai and Haman were two officers in Ahasuerus' army once, and they had gone out to war, and Haman's men didn't ration their food, so they finished their food. And Haman came to Mordechai and said, my men are out of food, you got to give me food. And Mordechai said, well, I warned you, what'd you eat everything up for? Now you want my men to give your men food? No. Someone says, I beg you, I'll give you whatever you want. So Mordechai says, okay, if you sell me yourself as a slave, then I'll let my men give your men food. So Haman says, okay, it's a deal. So Mordechai says, not so fast. You have to write on my shoe. We're going to carve the contract into my shoe that you are my slave. So Haman reluctantly agrees, and he carves it into his shoe. So everyone's bowing to Haman, and Mordechai says, I'm not doing that. So why wouldn't Mordechai do it? Every time Haman would walk by, he'd pick up his shoe and say, hey, I'm going to bow to you. So he didn't say it, but Haman understood what the picking up of the shoe meant. So all the servants tell Mordechai, why are you not listening? The king gave a command, right? You have a decree. Prime minister says to do something. So siruf pkuda, what, you're going to refuse the decree? So, yeah.
Can you go back over what was the relationship that Mordechai was a general? He was in charge of...
Mordechai and Haman were both generals, and Haman didn't ration his food when Mordechai did.
Right.
So Haman... Right, that was the initial relationship. And Haman became Mordechai's servant. Now, he wasn't acting as a servant, but really Mordechai had ownership over him. Now, our sages say that up in heaven there was a ruckus. Midas Adin came before God and said, this Haman, he's the one that's responsible for stopping the building of the Beis HaMikdash. He's the one from Amalek, this great Russia. And he's going to be chief of staff? He's in charge? Who was this Haman? So he's called Agagi. Let's go back in history again to King Saul's time. We're going back a few hundred years. King Saul is appointed our first king. And once the Jewish people have a king, they have a commandment to make war against Amalek, pay them back for the fact that they attacked us for no good reason when we left Egypt. So King Saul is called in by the prophet and he says, go attack Amalek and don't have compassion over them. Kill them out. So they go and fight Amalek and they do have compassion. And they don't kill them out. And they save the king Agag, this vicious king of Amalek. They don't kill him. They put him in prison. And when Shmuel, the prophet, comes and he sees the sheep were left alive, and our sages say that the Amalekim knew some kind of magic to make themselves into sheep, and that's how a lot of them escaped. They see that the sheep were left alive. Shmuel says, well, I hear the sheep. Saul, when he meets King Saul, he says, Kiyamti, I kept the word of God. And Shmuel says, what are these sheep I hear? So he says, oh, we saved them to bring sacrifices to God. And Shmuel says, what, God wants your sacrifices? He wants you to listen to what he said. He said you shouldn't leave any of the sheep alive. He said you should kill them out. What'd you leave Agag alive for? Because he left Agag alive that night, Agag had marital relations with the maid in the prison. And from that relationship came Haman. Haman came because why? Because King Saul from the tribe of Binyamin did not wipe out the people of Amalek like the prophet told him. And that's why the Gemara says that the people used to say, look at what the tribe of Benjamin did for me and look what the tribe of Judah did for me. The tribe of Benjamin caused me all these problems because of the tribe of Benjamin. That's why we have the whole story of Purim. Haman wanted to wipe us out. And the tribe of Judah, they gave us the redemption that King David didn't kill out Shimei ben Gera, what we discussed before. That from Shimei ben Gera, ultimately Mordechai and Esther came. So that's how the tribe of Yehuda probably used to boast. Look at what Benjamin did to me, and look at how Yehuda repaid me. So, what?
Is that why you read Parshat Zachor before Purim? Is that the connection? What are the connections?
Well, one of the connections is, yeah, that Haman is from Amalek, yeah. Haman is the descendant of Amalek, who also wanted to wipe us out. So, everyone tells Mordechai every day, bow, give in, give in. And Mordechai doesn't. So, they go and they tell Haman. They're always good friends. You should know that. People will always quote you. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is sitting in Beis Medrash talking innocently about the Romans, and he's quoted. So then he has to run into hiding. Person always has to recognize that he's going to be quoted. So, Haman was quoted. And, yeah.
Question. The reason why Mordechai did not bow down was not because of one of the three things that we're not allowed to do. It was not idol worship, or is that...
Yeah, it was.
It was. So who was saying for him to bow down? Other Jews were saying for him to bow down?
Seems like it wasn't other Jews, because it says that Mordechai told them that he was a Yehudi. He said, I'm not bound because I'm a Yehudi. And they said, yeah, let's see if he could really live up to it.
So it's not because he was a slave or he had agreed to be a slave.
So that's another reason. He said, I'm not going to bow down to his idol because I'm not allowed to. I'm a Jew. And I'm not going to bow down to him because he's my slave.
Okay. Now, at the same time, if there was some way for him to know what would have been, was there a way for Mordechai to know what would have been, like as far as the decree of the king?
Well, our sages say that one opinion says that the decree came about because the other Jews did bow down. If I'm not mistaken, that's one opinion in the Gemara and Megillah. Okay. All the Jews should have not bowed down.
So because Esther had to, it's also one of those is illicit relationships, which is one of those things that one should give their life for. So rather than him bowing down and do, if we use the reason that it was idol worship, we'll say, but he would have had to do one, but he didn't do it, and instead Esther had to do one of those three.
Well,
things.
Esther...
And either one of them could have saved the Jewish people according to that.
So a few things. First of all, he couldn't know that because he's not going to bow down, everyone's going to be... such a decree will come out, even though we do find some of the people in his time held it against him. They said, look at what you did. You threw me because of you. At that time, people were very upset at Mordechai. But... firstly, he couldn't have known that's what would ensue. And secondly, we didn't say that Esther did something wrong regarding having the relationship. she initiated it. What actually happened then needs to be discussed. And there's a difference between when the decree is already existent and before there's any decree. So Haman sees that he's not bowing, and Haman gets very upset. And our sages say that Haman said, you know what? These Jews, look at what they did to us. My great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Esav, his brother, the father of all these Jews, he stole all the blessings from him. I'm going to pay them back. It's payback time. That's something we have to notice. Sometimes we think that the non-Jews are working with us, and we think they don't look at history. There was, they once asked Ayatollah Khomeini, Iran. They asked him, I think it was him, they asked him, come on, you believe in the Bible, so why are you against the Jews in Israel? It says in the Bible they're going to be there. What does it say in the Bible about the Jews? What? Why are you so against them? So he said, the Jews? That's the Jews that are there, those aren't the Jews the Bible's talking about. Look at them, they drive on Shabbos, their theaters are open, their buses are running. Those aren't Jews. If they'd be keeping the Torah like they should, then maybe we'd have what to talk about. But the way they are now, that's not Jews. They have no right to the land. There was an Arab who was in prison here. And he said, when I was in prison, so I had a cellmate, a Jew, who I saw eating non-kosher and not keeping the Torah. And I said to him, you're not keeping the Torah? You're not eating kosher? When I entered prison, I vowed I would tell all my children and grandchildren, stop fighting the Jews. There's no point to it. But if they're not keeping what they're supposed to believe in, they're not keeping their end, so I'm going to tell every child of mine and every grandchild to do everything they can to take the land. They don't have any right to the land. If they're not keeping the Torah, they don't have a right to this. There's an Arab talking. So, and there's an Arab in present-day Israel. This was quoted in one of the newspapers. This is we sometimes think that our enemies don't read the history books and they're not coming based on history. And Chazal tell us that even Haman said, I'm paying back for what my great-great-grandfather got from his great-great-grandfather. And in Shlomo HaMelech's time, who was the problem? At the end of his days, he had a kid who his parents had problems with Shlomo's parents. So he wanted to pay Shlomo back. Over and over again, we see that people are being paid back for what they did. There's a historian who did research on Hitler. And Hitler was the one that changed Germany from being called the fatherland to the motherland. And he's the one that discussed removing the cancer from the breast of the motherland, Germany. And this historian did research and he found out that when Hitler was a little boy, his mother had breast cancer. And there was a Jewish doctor who used to come and use bleach in front of him, which was very, very painful. That was the way they treated it then. He used to try to remove it, and he didn't have the concern to remove the child from the room. And Hitler probably was traumatized by that. He saw this Jew coming and painting his mother, trying to remove this cancer from her breast, time after time. And ultimately, this historian even researched and found that Hitler kept this man alive. While he was killing out all the other Jews, this one Jewish doctor he kept alive, which psychologists say that a person always has to keep alive the thing that he hates. Meaning he would kill out the whole Jewish people, but that was one person he was keeping alive. So that, I don't know the theory, but this is a...
Did he not capture the doctor?
Maybe he caught him and put him in prison. This was quoted to us by a physics professor in high school. I wasn't there at the lecture itself. So we have to recognize that sometimes people are coming with a lot of history, and Haman is coming with his history. So Haman says, I got to deal with everyone. And in the month of Nisan, which is supposed to be our month of redemption, 12 days into the month, he draws his lots, and it comes out on the month of Adar. And Haman rejoices. He says, Adar, that's a good month. That's when their great leader Moshe died. And he didn't know that that was also the month when our great leader Moshe was born. So Haman tells Ahasuerus, there's a nation. It's only one nation. the scattered. Don't worry, you won't have a bald spot in your nations because they're scattered throughout the nations. And they're spread out all over. They have different customs. You know, if a fly falls into their wine, they take out the fly and they'll keep drinking the wine. If you or I dare touch that wine, then it's a problem. Then they have to pour out the whole glass and kosher the cup. They're weirdos. They stay separate from us. They have different beliefs. They don't enter our movie theaters. They don't do anything like the non-Jews. The Midrash says that they said movie theaters. Teatraot v'kirkasot. They don't come to our circuses. They don't come to our theaters. They don't partake of our pastimes. And work? They don't work. One day it's Shabbos, one day it's Sukkot, one day it's Pesach. Every other day they have a holiday. They're taking off. They say, we can't do the special municipality work today. We have a holiday today. They have every excuse in the world. It's not worth it to leave them around. If you know what? If it finds favor in your eyes, let's write out a decree to wipe them out. And I'll arrange, you'll get 10,000 silver loaves from the people who do the job. They'll bring it to your storage houses. The king takes off his decree. He gives it to Haman, the son of Hamdasa, the Agagi who hates the Jews, and he tells him, keep the money. Our sages say Haman and Ahasuerus were like two people. One guy has this huge pit in his yard, and he says, I got to fill it. And he's walking down the street, and he sees a neighbor who has this huge mound of dirt in his yard. And he tells him, you know what, I'll pay you money for that mound. And the guy says, you kidding? I got to get rid of it. You're doing me a favor. Take it. So the guy takes it and he fills his hole. They say that's what Haman and Ahasuerus were like. Haman's coming and saying, I'll pay you to kill the Jews. And Ahasuerus says, you kidding? Go ahead, do it for free. That's what kind of guy Ahasuerus was. So they call in the scribes. On the 13th day, remember on the 12th day he drew lots. Now Erev Pesach, supposed to be the month of redemption. On the 13th, Erev Pesach, he's writing up this decree to destroy the Jews. And the decree went out, so on the 14th, which is really Erev Pesach, the Jews know they're going to be killed within a year. And that's what we began tonight with, the Pasuk, Vayu Chayecha Tluyim Lecha Mineged. The Torah promises the Jewish people that if they don't keep the Torah, then they're going to feel like their lives are hanging in front of them. They're hanging by a thread. And you won't believe that you're going to see another day. They didn't believe they'd see next year Pesach. The Goyim are being told, you could loot the Jews, kill them out. Young, old, women, children, kill them out. The messengers start running out, and we discussed how in Achshverosh's time they could really run. They have well-paved roads. And the decree goes out throughout Shushan, the capital. And the king and Haman sit down to drink. And the city of Shushan, Navocha. Navocha, there was a mixture. There was great rejoicing because the Goyim said, great, we're going to get rich easy. We're going to get all the money back from the Jews. What back? The Goyim are always thinking they're taking money back. But they thought, we'll take it. And the Jews were crying. So you have at the same time rejoicing and crying mixed in the city. And the king is sitting down to drink. There's a halacha that says that when a court rules that a person is going to be killed, for the rest of that day they may not eat or drink. Yosef's brothers decide to kill him, and they sit down to drink and eat. Vayeshvu le'chol lechem, doesn't say to drink, to eat. If you look closely at the Megillah, you're going to see many correlations between the Megillah and the story of Yosef, Yosef and his brothers. Mordechai goes out in royal clothing, Yosef goes out in royal clothing. Yosef is second in command under a foreign king, Mordechai is second in command under a foreign king. We're going to see many, many correlations. The goblets of wine, we'll see as we go through it. So they sit down to drink. Ahasuerus is happy with the decree. And notice how wine is going to have a major role in the Megillah. They're sitting to rejoice. Wine is where Vashti got killed. He got drunk. They're sitting to drink. Who is Ahasuerus? When was the Megillah written? The Megillah was written while Ahasuerus was in command. When Esther wanted the Megillah written, our sages sent her word, they said, everyone's going to get upset at us. If we write up a Megillah describing how we killed out our enemies, you're going to get everyone jealous and upset at us. So Megillah's Esther is written while Esther is under Ahasuerus, and the Jewish people are under Ahasuerus. So it's fair to assume that they couldn't openly say this man is a lowlife. This man is a wretched Rasha. They can't say that because the Megillah is being written under his auspices. If he hears that they wrote such a thing, they're in trouble. So the whole Megillah has to be behastel, with hidden. There are a lot of hidden messages in Megillah's Esther. The whole name Esther. Esther means hidden because she was hidden. She was a modest woman. She was always at home. She wasn't walking around the marketplaces. So now the Megillah is telling us they're sitting to drink. And we have to read into it that Ahasuerus really wanted them dead no less than Haman did. And Mordechai knew everything that had transpired. Our sages say, what does it mean Mordechai knew everything that had transpired? What's everything that had transpired? So our sages say that God sent Eliyahu, the Kohen Gadol, down to speak to Mordechai. And Eliyahu told Mordechai, this isn't a decree only here on earth. Up in heavens, the Jews have been decreed to be wiped out from the world. And up in heaven, they deserve it. But you should know that the decree was signed with an earthenware seal, with a seal of tar. And it's still possible to break that seal. The decree in heaven can be broken. God sends Eliyahu to Mordechai to tell him, go daven. Gather the Jewish people and start davening. And when Mordechai hears that the decree is a decree from heaven, he tears his clothing, he wears sack, he places coal, hearth on his head, and he starts weeping, a great weeping. And our sages say that this weeping, vayizak ze'aka gedola umara, corresponds to the great weeping. That's the exact term that's used with regard to Esav. When Esav hears that he was tricked, what does he do? Vayizak ze'aka gedola umara. The same term. And our sages say because of Esav's great weeping, the Jewish people already back then came out the decree they're going to have to pay back. And he comes to the king's gates. He can't go in because of the way he's dressed. Wherever the decree reaches, wherever the word of the decree comes, the Jews start mourning. There's a tzom. Tzom means unification. The Jews gather together and crying, and they distribute sackcloth and afer, and they start praying, they start doing tshuva. So Pesach is setting in. The temple isn't built. We're halfway through the temple, and suddenly we have a decree not to build it, so we can't bring Karban Pesach, it seems. And when Pesach comes, what are the Jews busy doing? They're crying. Well, they don't have a choice. Esther is in her own enclave. She doesn't know what's going on. She hears that Mordechai is dressed like he's mourning. Something terrible must have happened. When she hears this, she got very scared. Our sages say that when a woman gets scared, so two things could happen. One is she could not have her period at all. Says when a woman is in hiding, she could go a long time without a period because of the fear of being in hiding. And sudden fear could also bring on the period. And that's what happens to Esther. She suddenly hears that Mordechai is dressed like this, and suddenly her onset begins. She sends clothing to Mordechai, and he doesn't agree to accept it. So she has to call someone to help her out. So she calls her faithful servant Hasoch. Our sages say, who is Hasoch? Hasoch is Daniel. Now we know Daniel had a high position in the courts that preceded Ahasuerus, but there are differing opinions among Chazal whether in Ahasuerus' time he still had a high position. If he had a high position, so then he's called Hasoch, because Hasoch, like Chasoch, to cut. All kingly decrees were cut upon his advice. And if he's called Hasach after he was removed from his high position, then he's called Hasach, like the cut, because he was cut down from his high position. Now, he's called a Saris. Saris literally means one who was castrated. And there are differing opinions among our sages whether Saris means literally, that every servant that would have any contact with the king's wives was castrated, and then that means that Daniel was also castrated, whether he liked it or not. Or Saris became a general term for any officer of the king's. So Daniel is called by Esther, and she sends him to Mordechai to know what's going on. Daniel comes to Mordechai, and Mordechai tells him what's going on, and how Haman wanted to give the money to the king to have the Jews destroyed, and gives Hasach a copy of the decree to show Esther and tell her, go before the king, beg him for your nation. Hasach comes, and he tells Esther what Mordechai says. And Esther sends him back. She says, you know, everyone knows this new decree. Haman didn't want the Jews to be able to come to the king. So he had a new decree put out. A decree that says that no one could come without an invitation to the king. And if you dare enter without an invitation, you get killed. Unless the king extends his scepter and touches you with the scepter, you get killed. And there were people there ready for any person who would dare walk in before the king, and the king's scepter did not touch him, they'd take him right away, they'd whisk him away to be killed. So Esther says, if I'm going to go now, when I have no invitation, I might end up dead. And Mordechai hears what Esther says. The pasuk says that Vayagidu, they told Mordechai what Esther says. So there are differing opinions as to why it says they told Mordechai. One opinion says that when Daniel heard this from Esther, he said, I'm not giving Mordechai that message back. Mordechai told you to go. You're telling him reasons not to go? I'm not going. Another opinion says that Haman had his eye out for what was going on. And when he saw messages going from Esther to Mordechai back to Esther, the next time Daniel went out to give word to Esther, Esther told him, go tell him that if I go now, I might end up dead. So Daniel was on his way to Mordechai, and Haman went and killed him. And that was the end of Daniel. That's how Daniel died. And that's why Esther sees she's not getting word back from Mordechai. She understands that something happened with her messenger, so she sends a new series of messengers to tell Mordechai what she said. At which point Mordechai tells her, don't think that you're going to escape, that you're going to be the future of the Jewish people. If you're silent now, don't worry, God will have a different way of saving the Jewish people. And you and your father's house, the exact opposite is going to happen. You're going to be wiped out. And who knows, maybe this is exactly why you're there. What are you there for? Why are you queen? In order to save the Jewish people now. And Esther tells him, okay, but gather the Jewish people in Shushan. I want you all to fast. And for the next 3 days, fast. And I and my girls will also gather in prayer and fast. And that's how I'm going to come to the king. And that's it. You're never going to see me again as your wife, because halachically, once I go of my own accord to the king, I'm never going to be able to get back. And that's why we read that pasuk in the mournful tune of Eicha. We say, V'cha asher avati, avati. As I was lost from my father's home, I am now lost from you. And Mordechai decrees an unusual decree that year in Pesach, no one's eating matzah. That year in Pesach, no one's eating anything. Everyone is gathering in the shuls and spending those first 3 days of Pesach in prayer and fasting. We're going to stop.